In a world that can be challenging, and at times unpredictable, it's hard to find moments to focus on what you need. Join Stephanie James on The Spark as she guides you to use your inner flame to ignite your best life. As a best-selling author, psychotherapist, transformational life coach, and international show host, Stephanie is dedicated to helping you create a life that takes you, your goals, and your passions to the next level, so you can live a life that is fully lit up and fully alive. She believes that your life is meant to be a beautiful expression of the things that light you up. That by living your dreams, you give permission to others to do the same. Are you ready to feel alive and inspired to fuel your dreams and put a fire behind your desires? Let's ignite a spark in one another that will illuminate the world. The Spark, with your host, Stephanie James, starts now.
Welcome to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James. I have with me tonight the lovely Michelle Welsh. We're going to be talking about her amazing book, The Magic of Connection: Stop Cutting Cords and Learn to Transform Negative Energy to Live an Empowered Life. So thrilled to have you with us, Michelle.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's just a joy, you know, and so I have to tell you right away when I started reading this book, what was interesting to me is this thing about cutting cords doesn't always do what we want it to do. And for those people that don't know what cutting cords are, maybe you'll have you explain first what that is and why sometimes that's just not enough.
Sure. So there's a type of a little phrase that a lot of people in the healing world, in the energetic world, will call cutting a cord. And we might use that anyway, like, let's just cut the cord between us. You know, let's just stop this. I used to practice law. I still can, but I didn't do divorces, but I'd hear it a lot. Like, okay, let's cut the cord. Let's get divorced. We'll never see each other again. We'll never have to deal with each other again. Most of us know that's not true. Okay. Especially if there's children involved, you just don't cut cords between people. So in a healing or an energy, put that in an energy context, there's a phrase that we use called cutting cords. And there are many people that will have healings or they'll do rituals, which if this works for them, hey, no problem. Keep using it. But I found with a lot of people that when they say, I'm just going to cut the cord and I'm going to do this ritual process of cutting an etheric cord between me and another energy, whether it be a memory, a person, a place, a thing, whatever, because everything's energy, it never worked. And my premise of why that never works, so that's what the cords are. It's an etheric connection between anything, anyone, any place, any memory, any feeling. And the reason I believe that doesn't work, and I've seen that it doesn't work from trying lawsuits and civil cases to criminal defense to prosecution, and actually working on and picking juries for divorce cases and having gone through a divorce, I really believe that because we're all one, ultimately, the minute you see that, let's say we cut a cord with a friend and we think we're really over that friendship and we've cut them out of our lives. But the minute we see them again, that cord that may be dormant just fires back up again. And then we have all those feelings rushing back. And so that's why I say that we should look at more healing cords, not necessarily breaking boundaries and not having good, healthy boundaries, because that's imperative, but healing the cord for ourselves. And instead of just going around cutting cords with everybody, because when I wrote this book, everybody, all I heard, and even from spiritually minded, I thought people, was just cut that person out. Be authentic. If you're not authentic, if you're not cutting this person out of your life and this person out of your life, then it turned into the election where everybody was just hating on everybody. And then through COVID, we found a new way to connect. And so it's really taught me a lot about how we connect with one another and what we really want to do as a collective of being one, really one, And how can we really ever cut anyone out of our life totally?
That's really beautiful. I love that because I feel like we live in a world right now where there has been so much divisiveness. And, you know, when we can really get to that point where we realize we are all energetically connected. And I imagine that's part of what you're saying when you're talking about the magic of connection.
That's it. I mean, because, you know, we say that it's real easy, I think, to say we're connected. I mean, that's like a pretty easy thing to say, you know, okay, we're all one, right? Okay, we're all one. But then when we really get down to the brass tacks of it, it's hard to say that we're one with somebody that maybe we don't like. Now that, again, the last time I'll disclaim, because my husband says I disclaim too much as an attorney, but it doesn't mean we have unhealthy boundaries. But it's so simple to say that we're a collective and we're all one energetic body on this. I don't think just on Earth, but I think with galaxies and planets, I believe we're one with those too. That then we think we can just cut those things out of our life and there won't be any ripple effect. And there really is, because there's 0 degrees of separation if we're all one. It's illogical to say you're one and then say that you can cut yourself off from part of what you're one with.
I absolutely agree. And so then if we realize, Michelle, this oneness, what are the benefits for us being in touch with this oneness?
That's a great question. I feel that it makes me feel better to know that there is something so much bigger than just me. You know, being in touch with the oneness, we're going to treat people differently, first of all, because they are us and we are them. And we also know the whole collective, everyone has our backs. We're even when we maybe aren't on the same vibe, you know, we hear about that all the time. Okay, well, we're on different frequencies. We're, you know, just my radio channel is not your radio channel. We just agree to disagree. But really, and that's true, we could be on different frequencies. We may have come here with a completely different purpose. I mean, there's a purpose, you know, this over here, and it's completely maybe not in alignment with the purpose over here. And it's hard to know how those could be one. But to me, it gives me a little bit of peace to know that even though in the midst of the most, we can look back, and I hate to just keep bringing it up, but look back without going into the politics of it, the election, and just people who were just families tearing each other apart, and know that if we really are one, and if we could just lean into that more, the emotion, you know, or the, not even the emotion, the factual truth of that, then we could find some ways to connect. You know, like the Dalai Lama says, start with those things that you can agree upon instead of starting with everything you don't agree upon. I mean, why do we start with the things that we disagree about? Why don't we start with the things that we can say, you know, we agree with this, and that's the collective. We find the things that we can agree. So it makes me feel really good to know that I have a lot of people that have my back, and it's really everyone, right?
Yeah, I think you exactly hit it. You know, that I've heard so many times that principle that if we actually focused on anything that we had in common, that those things in common would far outweigh the things that we've chosen to divide ourselves about. So I just, you know, this, I feel like this is such an essential conversation. And so I'm curious too, though, about transforming negative energy. You know, you say, you know, part of the title is transform negative energy to live an empowered life. How do we do that when we're confronted with negative energy, either externally or we realize that maybe we're carrying some internal negative energy?
So we read the book. No, so we start slowly. And that's why we want to practice understanding energy before we get to the point of a real crisis. So the front of my book talks about transforming, which is very close to transmuting. I want to get us ultimately to where we're transmuting, but transforming is a little more palatable to, and people understand that word a little bit more. But to do that, it's a lot of practice of, I use a lot of visualization. And I will say this, I saw somebody write the other day that not everybody can visualize. And I take issue with that, because if somebody just like my stepson, I know how old I am now because he has a Miata. Okay, do you remember? You're not as old as me, but I remember those cars. And I remember when those cars just went out of style. Well, now they're way back in. People are rebuilding these cars and they're really, really cool to get a Miata. And so he knows that that car is like a creamy white color. So I can tell him, think about the color of that car. And now turn that car to red. He's just visualized that. So it's really pretty simple, right? So I do a lot of to transmute energy. I do a lot of visualization work with people to literally take, and especially let's say somebody has just made us so angry. First of all, a lot of times we're going to have to take a pause because it's really hard to transmute energy when we're just so angry, because we may just bring about more, and I talk about in the book, just more anger. I've done that before. I've just, anger can beget more anger, and I can just create more anger if that's what I'm thinking. But if I can calm down and use some of the methods in the book, some essential oils or crystals or things that help me just chill out a little bit, then I scan my energy and I say, okay, you know, what's mine? What belongs to me? And now what am I responsible for? And it's not even really, I call it minding your own energy. And then I start to, one of the things I have people do, and I don't know how many times today I've had people to do this. Literally, let's say somebody just literally at work made us so mad. They just left us out of a project that really, it was our idea, let's say. And then they took full credit for it. I mean, that's going to make somebody, this is pretty not cool, right? So I say, take that, however that feels, name it. I won't go through everything, but take the bad feeling of it and don't let it get in here yet into wherever it would connect, wherever that cord of connection would go in your body. It may stab you in your gut probably, or it might get you around your throat, wherever it would connect and take root. Stop it first, look at it, name it, and do all your clairs, all your senses with it. Smell it. That sounds kind of gross, but look at the texture. What color is it? You know, it doesn't look so great. And it may be a cord. It may be a fat blob of something. Then, and give it a name, then change it to what you want it to be, some vitality that you could use for it. And this is transmutation. Because instead of throwing it back at them, which a lot of people will say to do, okay, what can we do to get even with them? We're going to change it into something we can use for our vitality. So we're going to rename it, and we're going to change the cord into something like a silver, beautiful cord, or the blob into something beautiful. And we're going to listen to what it has to say to us now, all the clairs, all the senses, and go through all of them. What does it look like? And change it. And the extra thing I would have people do is to give it a symbol. So the next time that happens and that person walks by and you're going, yeah, there goes so-and-so who stole my idea. I'm cool. I don't really like them. We can just remember that symbol, whatever. Let's say it's a bell. We'll just remember the bell. And we don't have to go through the whole process again. We go straight to the bell, and then we just take the bell and we put it into if we felt kicked in the stomach, the solar plexus, we just put that bell right there. And so we're using that for vitality instead of sending that icky energy back to them. And that is transmutation. That is magic. We are literally, because energy never goes away. It's thermodynamic. It literally is physics. It's thermodynamics. It never goes away. It only changes form, and there's a limited amount. So we can change the form of it. We literally can. We can try to, I laugh sometimes when people are saging around here, because I'm like, okay, you just saged that out the door, but did you intend to change the form of it? Because if you didn't, it's just lingering outside the door, because you didn't change the form of anything, because energy never goes away. I mean, you can say I'm sending it to the light, or I'm sending it to poor Mother Earth, where we always do that. I talk about it in my book. I'm like, why does everybody keep sending everything to Mother Earth? Why can't we help her by transmuting the energy? That's truly going green. If people want to talk about going green, we're always like, send it to Mother Earth. And I'm like, she's worn out. Can't we transmute some of the energy ourselves? You know, so that's transmutation. It's literally like turning water into wine. It's magic.
It truly is magic. And I'm just astounded with how much this overlays with what I do as a psychotherapist when I'm working with trauma clients. And one of the techniques that we use is when they're first identifying some of that pain is exactly what you're saying. We locate it in the body. I have them name what shape it is, what texture it is. You know, if it had a color, what would it be? If it made a sound, what would it be? Even the same thing you said, if it had a smell, what would it be? And then to really bring in what I say is either divine light or whatever their higher power, higher self is, and bringing whatever color of healing light that is directly into that area to, you know, permeate, penetrate, go in, around, and through that area. And I've never thought of it that way, but that's exactly what it is. They're transmuting that energy. And I love the next step that you take it, where then you give it more of a healing quality and a symbol, where then once it's transmuted, it can actually be used in this really beautiful, positive way.
Thank you. Yeah. And it is, I love how you said that, how you have them use whatever it is to them, you know, the light, because you can flood a cord of connection with that light too, with that color. You know, and I go through the different colors in the book that you can flood. If you think about, you know, just a cord of connection between, and maybe it's a chain. I always think about, let's just use maybe the time I was a helicopter mom, you know, and I kept saving my kids, my one of my three children by taking, every time they forgot their homework, I'd run it up there, right? And then I'd embarrass them and say, stop forgetting your homework, or something like that. I didn't do that. But, you know, at least not with two of them, but I probably did with one. And so, you know, maybe then I'm telling them everything to do in their life, and maybe I'm just helicopter momming them. And, you know, what does that look like? What would that cord of connection look like? It might look like, eventually it might look like a chain. You know, like it might be a chain link chain that, you know, is connecting, that they don't feel they can break loose. They can't fly from the nest. You know, it may be something where I have them on a leash, you know, and so you can visualize that cord you have in any way that it feels to you. But then you can think of it as being where you can flood something through the cord. And I always say, and I am not a therapist at all. I don't claim to be. And I refer out to therapists all the time. I'm just a psychic, you know, I just do energy work. And so we refer to therapists constantly. But I do say, you know, think, you don't always need to worry about the other end of the cord yet. We are thinking about that, but we don't even know if, in some instances, you'll have somebody come in and they are, maybe their sacral chakra is really, they have a cord, because maybe they have had been dating someone a lot, and maybe they've been used, and maybe it's been a very intimate relationship. And a lot of times that's going to be a hook or a cord of connection in the sacral chakra area, not just the heart, but in the sacral chakra area, because there's a lot of energy that passes back and forth and that type of thing. And so then I would say, you know, that's when the cutting cords doesn't work, because the next time they see them, it fires right back up. You know, they go out to that restaurant or where they all hang out and it fires right back up. And so I just say flood that energy. And a lot of times the sad thing about it is the other person's moved on and they're not even thinking. So we don't even deal with that yet. We just deal with transmuting the energy for us. We don't have to worry yet, even though our human nature may be to, we can just flood it if we want to, flood it with love of whatever color we want, if we're at that point. But really, we're dealing with, we could even put a stop gap in there, but we're not cutting the cord because we really can't, you know. And so we do a lot with the color and visualizing and calling in the same thing that you're saying. Is that same type of work. I also recommend, you know, really scanning every single day, scanning our own energy to know what's ours. I think it's so easy. Some of the things in the book just sound so simple, but a lot of people don't do them. Like every morning, every time before you go into a meeting, every time before you go into any kind of store or whatever, you really scan the physical, mental, emotional, spiritual bodies. You know, what belongs to me? What is mine? Because we all lean, I think, since we're all one, that we all, I'm careful how I say this, a type of empath in this way, not the compassionate kind necessarily. And I've had a lot of psychotherapists actually agree with me. I thought they would shoot me down and go, oh, that is so wrong. But they, you know, even really sociopaths or whatever they're called, they lean into your fear. They want to lean into fear. And so they're leaning into something, you know, that they like that fear. And so they're still leaning into a vibration that they want to lean into. I didn't spend a lot of time on the book on that because really it's not my area of expertise, but we all lean into the, because we're one, we lean into other each other's energy. So we're always absorbing energy, no matter how much we try to protect with, I think I just lost something here. One of my earbuds. We lean in with just everything, you know. Some of us lean in more passionately and don't even know why than others, like empath, and that's why we call them empaths. Where I thought that the book, other, some of the other books that have, were so wonderful, and why I wrote mine and included empathy and empaths in it and spoke a lot about it, was that I was told how to, that I was an empath. I didn't think I was being told how to be one, because I was being told a lot of things I couldn't do. I can't, I need to protect. And I own stores full of things to protect. So I'm not against protecting. You know, I love crystals. I mean, I wear bracelets like Wonder Woman to protect and all that kind of those things. But, and you know, have everything in the book. You can use affirmations, all kinds of ways to protect. But what we're not doing is we're not transmuting. A lot of people, we're not saying that I'm the superhero of my story. I'm the superhero of my energy. I can choose today if I want to absorb energy and how much I want to absorb and what I want to do with that energy. You know, I might want to sip in a little bit of energy that can give me some vitality instead of just running from it. I might decide to go to that event that normally I would stay home from because I'm an empath and I'd be worried what everybody would think of me. You know, I'd leave thinking, oh, did they like me? You know, everybody tells me I'm too sensitive and, you know, I'm really worried. Did I say something wrong? I feel everybody's energy there. I don't know what energy I picked up. And there's always just such a, I noticed in my store, such a negativity bias. The people, you wouldn't hear much about all the positive energy they picked up. You would just begin to hear. And I think a lot of this was picked up from, not intentionally, but from a lot of things they read that they would pick up from, I don't know why. Maybe we just have a negativity bent, which is unfortunate. But if you're going to, if you, if you know, why aren't we picking up the positivity? And I would hear every day people come into my store, I'm an empath. I'd say, oh, yeah, you know. And I try to be very friendly because I hear it about 50 times a day. And I am one too, card carrying, traditional caring empath. I say traditional in the sense that, as opposed to the ones that I say, some of them might be empaths that aren't, we don't traditionally think of as empaths. And, you know, I don't ever want to be ugly about it, but I want to say, why can't we go a step beyond and say, okay, what are we going to do about it then? How can we, instead of saying all the things we can't do and all the things we have to hide from and put bubbles of protection around us, which are all great things and we may still need to do, but can't we at some point get to where we can transmute that energy and we can be the heroes, we can write the story we want to write. And, you know, Melinda Gates said that not too long ago. She said she was being interviewed when the story about her getting divorced came out. And she said, look, I think that the leaders of the future are the empaths because they are the ones who are compassionate. And I will say this, there are also people who say that's not fair to the empaths because you're putting too much on them. You know, they're not going to be able to handle that. Well, wow. Okay. So now you're telling them they can't handle that. They can't handle life. I'm not talking about severe social anxiety. I'm talking about the majority of people who know that they lean into energy. They feel it more acutely. They feel the earth. They feel animals. They feel the feelings of other people. And I think it's time that we know that we can choose to change that form of energy if we want to, instead of just always hiding from it.
Michelle, such important information. And we need to take a commercial break. Okay. And then we're going to be back with Michelle Welsh and talking about her amazing book, The Magic of Connection. So come on back and join us. We're going to be talking about some of Michelle's own life experiences and getting to delve deep into understanding the negativity bias in the brain, as well as understanding how being an empath, you can still go full out and live fully in the world. Join us soon on The Spark.
Not just talk, conversation for profound self-awareness. Stick with us. Your best life awaits on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James, and I'm here with the wonderful Michelle Welsh. And we're discussing her book, The Magic of Connection, Stop Cutting Cords and Learn to Transform Negative Energy to Live an Empowered Life. Michelle, welcome back. I'm really curious, you know, in my practice, one of the things that I teach people is about this natural negativity bias in the brain. And it's really that caveman brain part of us where we are hardwired with a part of us that's a hippocampus that's always scanning the environment for a threat. And it's there to protect us. It's really there so that, you know, if we see something and it looks like a snake, we'll jump back. When oftentimes, you know, if we stop and pause, what we thought was a snake was actually just a stick.
Good point. Yeah.
And so I think that that's one of the things that we have to overcome. And one of the things that I know for sure is that we have to practice focusing on the things, like you were saying in the beginning, you know, it's focusing on good energy. It's focusing on the things that bring us joy, that we can train those parts of our brain to start noticing, you know, that mnemonic device that where our attention goes, energy flows. And it's a principle in physics that what we focus on expands and gets bigger.
Sure.
So yeah, go ahead.
I start my book off. It was difficult to decide to start my first chapter of my book with the laws of the universe. Yawn, but I did. And I did it very in like two pages. Because no one, because you just brought one of them up, right? And no one had really ever just succinctly that I'd read, because I did never understand all of them, because mainly people talk about the law of attraction, but there are so many. And so I went through them because you really need all of them to understand how to transmute energy. And so that's a really good reason to get the book, is just because in two and a half pages, I said, okay, I'm going to understand what these laws of the universe really mean, instead of people just throwing around, okay, the law of duality, the law of relativity, the law of this or that, you know, the law of correspondence. And so I've had a lot of people since then say, I finally understand what these laws mean. And it does, it takes all of them. And that's why if we jump, this is just an aside, if we jump right to the law of attraction, that book, The Secret, which was actually a movie first, and then there were four books afterwards. That's why a lot of people get very frustrated by that, because they're jumping right straight to like the sixth law of the universe, which the one right after it is the law of action, which is in the law of attraction. And we kind of forget about that one sometimes. So anyway, I always find that interesting. So, but I did. I started the book with that because I thought I laid it out like a case, like I would a law, you know, a case that I was trying, you know, in front of a jury or a judge to say, and you kind of have to know your laws first, you know what you're trying to show. And that's what with transmutation, it's been around, we can all do it, but there's been these secret societies of alchemy and all these things, and really every single one of us can and are capable of changing the form of energy. We really are. There's this old like proverb, and it says, oh, you can't change the stick as it goes down. I'm saying it wrong, but, you know, as it's beautiful, as the stick, as it goes down the ocean, the stick's just, and I'm thinking, oh, but you can change the stick when it goes down the ocean. We just have been told we can't. You could totally change the whole ocean if we all wanted to, but we've just programmed ourselves to think that we can't do that.
Okay. Yeah, I believe that as well. And I'm curious on your own journey, Michelle, how did you go from being a lawyer, from an attorney, and get into bigger forms of understanding the universal laws and energy? And what took you on that journey?
Well, first of all, Stephanie James, I want you to know that you asked that nicer than anybody else who's ever asked that question, more kindly. I have had it said to me like this: how'd you fall so far down from being an attorney to doing this? And I thought, oh, whoa. So what you just said is beautiful. Thank you. Because, and it shows to me you get it. And that's why you have this show. Because I finally realized there was just more to, I wasn't happy in life. A lot of lawyers, quite frankly, when you look at metaphysics, spirituality, you're going to find a lot of lawyers who are doing this. I've noticed since I thought, oh, wow, this will be interesting. That'll set me apart. No, it doesn't, because so many lawyers are in this field. Mm-hmm. And why? Because I think that they become disillusioned with what's going on in the world. They see a lot. And maybe aren't really happy. And I felt, you know, there was just a big, that would say, you know, I was raised very religiously, but I feel like I'm stuttering about it, but it's not that, trying to find the perfect words. It's not that that wasn't working for me either. It's just that it wasn't all working. And so how it happened for me was, frankly, a divorce. It all just culminated and it wasn't working. I wasn't living. Mm-hmm. And I was surviving. I was probably headed for another nervous breakdown, because I had one at about 30 with two of my kids at home. And then around about 38, I had my daughter. I'm not ashamed at all to talk about mental illness. I really had it. And I was told, you know, you have to work. Oh, no, you shouldn't work. you're a mom, you should stay at home. So many of us get that. And we really got it back then. And finally, I just said, enough, that I'm not finding what I'm looking for. And so we just started, my new husband and I started making, his name's Roger, started making these bracelets. And I would wear them to court, and I almost like a mala bead, and I would just do my little mantras or affirmation just around the beads, and they would just calm me down. And that is how I ascended. Thank you for putting it that way. And moved up into my purpose, as opposed to, I can still practice law. People have asked me recently, about 2 years ago, whatever, well, I guess 2 years ago, to run for judge. And I was tempted. My ego was very tempted. That would make me feel really important or something like that. It's just, thank you so much for putting it that way, because, and now, of course, with the stores, we're doing very well. But even when I was just not even doing much and just pursuing, making little bracelets to sell at my friends' houses, you know, but they're big houses, and I had gotten a divorce and left my big house, and here I was, what the heck have I done? I was much happier, and I was pursuing what I was hoping to find some peace in life, and I have.
I can tell. I mean, you're so radiant, you know. I just talk about good energy. You've got such great energy from the moment you came on the screen. And so I can feel that transformation that's happened within you. And I appreciate you sharing that story, because I think we do go through those times in our life where, you know, I call it, we get taken to the end of our being. Mm. And at those times, we can either, you know, I said, well, we have a choice. We can kind of roll over and die, you know, where we kind of become non-functioning and we're not contributing and we feel miserable, or we say, you know what, there's something else.
Yeah.
And for me in those moments, it's definitely been this act of surrender where I'm like, okay, I got to get myself out of the way, because I'm just not doing a good job at this. I'm trying to push my will, and I'm trying to, you know, just be so driven through this that I'm not following whatever that divine path is for me.
I totally agree.
And so did you feel like, Michelle, that a divine path opened up for you? Did you feel like once you kind of stopped, you know, these things that were bringing you misery, whether it was the job or, you know, a marriage that wasn't working, how, besides the beads, how did you find what that purpose was within you?
Yeah. And, you know, the beads were symbolic of, I think, of everything else. Although, you know, I do think they have vibrations. How did I find it? Honestly, and I don't mean it as AA necessarily, but because it wasn't AA for me, but just the mantra, you know, of day by day, moment by moment, I found it through meditation. I found it through stillness. I found it through, I read about 5 books a week. I am an avid reader. I read every book that comes in our store now. And I said that to somebody on our show, it was Matthew McConaughey, and he was like, do you have kids? I mean, what are you doing? My husband had also said, we used to go to like 3 movies a week. And he was like, horrible. Y'all must be horrible parents. And I'm like, well, they're grown. Most of them anyway. My stepkids aren't totally grown, but, but I read a lot, and I found myself giving myself the permission to accept what I wanted to accept, and to not, and to not take in or resonate with what I didn't resonate with, you know, just blow it off. And I had never really been given myself permission to do that in life before. And that's what I tell anybody I teach or anybody who reads my book. If there's something that doesn't make sense to you at the time, you might revisit it later, and it might make sense later. Things now make sense to me that didn't, you know, even 3 years ago. But if it doesn't, by all means, I'm not here to push anything down anybody's throats, but it used to be that way for me. This is what you're to believe. This is what you're to do. This is what success is. And that wasn't always pushed on me. I pushed a lot of that on myself. very much a perfectionist, very hard on myself. You know, that's not perfect. And that's a part of the empath thing. And so I think it was a process of, and it still is. I mean, there's days where it's funny. I had a guy, and he said, "Oh, you're just, everybody knows you in these, the community and stuff. We just bought the Northwest Tarot Symposium. And so we'll be doing that in Portland when it Zoom, and then we'll be doing it hopefully in October of next year." And he goes, "You know, they all just think you're just the girl from Texas is just smiling all the time, and I know better." And I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I have shadow side. I mean, don't we all? I mean, yeah, we're real." And so, you know, and you have to work through those things. But I at least, so it's a process for me, but I quit trying to be what everybody else wanted me to be. And I still try to be professional in that regard. I try to have ethics. And I, those things are very important to me, but it's because they're important to me. It's mm-hmm. not because I think that's what everyone else expects of me. We put so many expectations on ourselves, or, you know, and I even talk about that in the book, you know, maybe we've walked around our whole life on eggshells, maybe because of an alcoholic, not in my case, but maybe because of an alcoholic father, mother, maybe a, yes, in my case, some very critical teachers or coaches, you know, that really put us down. You know, they used to be that way when they coached, you know. I was a tennis player. And so, and we've even seen that with the lately with the Olympics that's been coming mm-hmm. out. And it's really been coming out horrifically in some horrific stories. And so I think, thank you for letting me share it, but I think it's important for other people to realize that it just doesn't happen overnight, that you, an awakening, I don't think it feels like it's overnight. You feel an awakening overnight, but it's not, it keeps going. I mean, you still have those days where you're down, or you still have those days where you're like, "Ugh, what did I do? You know, did I ruin my entire life? Did I, what have I done?" And you still have those moments. I mean, we all do. We're not perfect.
Michelle, thank you so much for saying that. I just think that's one of the biggest messages that we can give, because so often people look at, you know, authors, thought leaders, the, you know, luminaries, light workers like yourself, and they think, "Oh, well, they have it all together. They have it all figured out." And I love the expression, you know, that we're all the same height. We're all in this together, you know, we're these human beings that are going through this messy experience called life. And there's days we have it really figured out, we're on top of our game. And there's days that we struggle, and we all have those emotions. And so thank you so much for sharing that, because I really feel like it gives people then permission to be more authentically themselves, and that being human contains all of those emotions and all of those experiences. So thank you so much. We're going to go on a quick break again, and then we'll be right back with the wonderful Michelle Welsh continuing this great conversation. Come on back.
You've been listening, but are you watching? Tune in to your favorite shows on the Transformation Talk Radio Facebook page. We stream live video podcasts every day.
So welcome back to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James, here with Michelle Welsh. We're discussing this amazing book, The Magic of Connection. And so, Michelle, one of the things we were talking about during break is that oftentimes you get questions around forgiveness and, like, how do you cut the cord if someone has been abusive towards you? How do you forgive someone like that? What does that look like? What do you tell people about that?
Thanks for asking that, because that's one of the biggest questions I get. When I told people kind of the premise of the book, the first question they would say, "Well, what about the big ones? What about, I mean, I'll just go there. What about the person who abused you? What about the pedophile?" I mean, I had cases. That was my last criminal defense case when I stopped. Okay. That was my last one. And so some of us just have, that's, we just won't go there, you know? And so, and I didn't plan on saying that, but I just did. It's public record. That was my last case. And before I went to civil law. And so the answer to that is I have a whole chapter in the book. It's called Forgiveness from a Distance. And I have volunteered at Genesis Women's Shelter and been on the board and been very active with them for now, I don't know, 20, I'll say how old I am. As old as they are, I've been there. I started the first year they opened, maybe the second. And I wouldn't, how we do it is we don't have to be best friends with people that we forgive. The forgiveness, as we've all heard, is for us. So when we're going through this process of not cutting the cord, because we won't, I mean, we can heal and go to a therapist and do our work, go to a battered women's shelter or a any place that we need to go for help and get all the of that healing that we need, or go to an energy worker too. I would suggest both for things such as that. It's that serious. But yet we're still connected to that energy, unfortunately, or fortunately. I mean, I know that's a horrible thing to say, but you will get to the point where they told me one time at Genesis, I was watching and I said, why on earth would you want even the fathers? And I'm just saying fathers because it's typically there. They know it can be both men, women, but they mm-hmm. serve as women and children. Okay. And Megan and Harry just gave them a bunch of money when the roof fell down and the thing in Dallas. So they've been on the news a lot. So I was watching and I said, why would you even encourage that they ever, you know, talk to the, don't you want to cut off no supervision, you know, as the attorney would say that. They said, you know, eventually that child's going to ask about that father. That child's going to ask about that father. The child's going to want to know. The child has so much more forgiveness. And there has to be some sort of healing, even if it's from a distance or even if it's from a supervised way. And that's my answer, is that even if we never speak to that person again, or we never see that person again, for our healing, we have to go through those motions of what I was talking about earlier and all the things that I talk about in the book and all the things that our therapist would help us with too, to work through those emotions. And so I am not talking about not having those good boundaries. That would break my heart if anybody ever thought I was saying that, because I've lived through a lot of those things. And I've also had cases that I could barely stomach. And so thank you for asking me that question.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, and that's such a great answer. I think that it's interesting to me. One of the things that I've worked with clients to do, what I would call detach with love, in so many ways sounds resonant to part of what you're saying, because if you detach, it's like you're making that boundary, but you still have that cord of love that can be forgiveness, that can be healing. And it doesn't mean you ever contact that person again. It's not about them, right? I love that it's about the self, the internal, you know, internal healing of the self.
Yeah. And so that's my, I like your way you put it. And then in the book, I just called it Forgiveness from a Distance, because that's the only way I could really think of what you're doing. You're forgiving them, but it's just from a distance. They don't have to be any part of it. You don't even have to ever contact them. You know, you don't have to make any amends or any of that. You are doing the work for you.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. And you know what else I love, Michelle, is that, you know, sometimes people think like psychology or spirituality, you know, metaphysics, that it's all in these different camps. But my experience in the last 15 years and more all the time is how blended these different camps are, if you will, that we're all in one camp together.
I think that's one of the biggest blessings I've seen in maybe the past 10 or 15 years, because I think that it might have been where I think it's becoming more and more so that way. And, you know, I can only speak from my experience, but it's also what's cool is quantum physics is becoming blended. So we've got the doctors, the psychotherapists, the counselors, you know, the licensed therapists, all the people from that kind of the counseling and doctor side of therapy. And then we have the quantum physicists who get understand that we're all one and agree with it. And now we have, you know, the metaphysical side people coming all kind of together. That's a paradigm shift, if you ask me. I mean, that is when, if you ever said probably 15 years ago, and we had one on our show, that an astrophysicist was going to agree with a lot of stuff in my book, there's stuff in there he didn't agree with, I'm sure. But, and say, oh yeah, you know, that thing at the top of your book, where all the little, oh yeah, we're all one. And I believe in parallel universes and, you know, the choices you make, dictate this and that and the other, you know, the thoughts create your reality. And he's sitting there saying all the stuff that, you know, people have been saying for a long time. And he's also saying some different stuff, because some of the things I say, I don't repeat things. A big thing about me as a writer and as a teacher, and all everybody who knows me will tell you this, I'm a little bit of a rebel. Just because 100 million people have said it doesn't mean I'm going to repeat it. I am going to, because I did that for most of my life. So I'm going to test it. If it rings true to me, I'll put it in. That's why I say in my book, if it doesn't ring true to you, move on. Move on to the, at least give it another chapter or two, because you'll probably find most people find that it does resonate with them. But if there's something there that you're like, no, I don't like that. But what shocked me is the people, I was warned that there would be people who would be upset about the cord cutting thing. I was really warned about it. And, I can't believe you're going to say that. And then Llewellyn was so kind, my publisher, to put it right in my subtitle. Thank y'all. No, I mean, I'm serious. And I thought I was really going to get, and most people, if they really read it, they're like, oh, you know, that really makes sense. You know, because you really, if you logically go through it, and I say in my book, I say, you know, for us to say, it's really difficult when you're in the middle of it. It's kind of Pollyanna when you're in the middle of it to say, thank you for giving me the opportunity to transmute energy. Thank you for giving to in situations. You know, it's easier maybe if somebody just cuts you off in traffic. I start with that one. That's what I practice on. So I don't, you know, like rear up behind them, beside them, and pat over them and honk at them, because, you know, I'm prone to maybe do that in Dallas traffic. But so it's a good place to start with really easy stuff to transmute, you know, like stuff that, but that's, you know, it's really, I think it's time. One of the biggest things I want to say is there are so many people who talk about being an empath, and they are wonderful. But I wish we could all start talking more about what we can do instead of limiting all of the empaths to everything that they have to protect themselves from and all the stuff that they can't do. Because we can do so much. Compassionate people and sensitive people don't need to hide. There may be a time you want to hide and you want to curl up in a ball and put the covers over your head, and that's just fine. But we do have the choice to lead the world, if we want to a better place and to a more compassionate place.
And the world needs more empaths. The world needs the sensitive people, you know, and what that reminds me of, Michelle, is, you know, there's a lyric out of an old Jewel song. You remember the singer Jewel?
Yes.
And she has this song in it, and one of the lyrics says, please be careful with me because I'm sensitive and I'd like to stay that way.
I love it.
I love that.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So I've always been, you know, and I resonate with you too, because I've always been the rebel in my family. And, I'm all about that, and for, you know, challenging beliefs and seeing what fits for us. And also, you know, part of what I'm hearing you say is maybe also challenge ourselves a little bit out of our comfort zones. You know, if we're the ones that are the empaths, that we can, you know, we can build safety internally and we can be in this world and contributing to this world and actually helping to heal it. So, you know, not hiding our gifts away by feeling like, oh, I can't handle this big old world. And what I'm hearing from you is that there's ways that we can.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's my hope. I dedicated the book at the beginning to three of my kids. And the three that I, you know, that I gave birth to, that I didn't really have permission from the other two. So they may be in the next one. And I said, to the one bullied for singing sensitive songs, to the one ridiculed for wearing an eye patch, and to the one left out for digging for dinosaurs. And then I asked in the first, and I know we are short on time, but I asked, you know, here it is. How often has someone told us to shake it off, get a grip, move on, get over it, let it go. You're too sensitive or toughen up. Only for these platitudes to make us feel even worse than we already did. Our friends, family, and society act as if this should be easy. Just let it go, for God's sake. Eventually that advice just becomes nastier and nastier. And that's why I wrote the book, because even on social media, it was just like, oh, well, then you should just cut them off. And everybody was just cutting everybody off. And sometimes that's good advice. I'm sure that there are people, you know, that we need to remove ourselves from for a while, and that's healthy. But if we just cut, if we build up so many walls, all of a sudden we're behind the wall with ourselves. And it's just us. Yeah. And all of a sudden, especially if we haven't checked our energy, all of a sudden we're going, oh, wait, some of this might have, and it's not about blame, but oh, wait, I didn't do an empath energy scan. And some of this mood stuff is actually me. Maybe I needed to work on some of this stuff. And it maybe wasn't my best friend. And maybe it wasn't the neighbor. And maybe it wasn't all my husband. Maybe some of it was some stuff that maybe I could have talked through with some people and some healing that I maybe should have worked, you know, could have worked through, not should have, but could have worked through, instead of building up all these walls to just wall myself out from people. And I wrote the book because I heard it every single day. I cannot tell you how much I heard it in my stores.
I bet. Well, and I love the invitation to step out of this cancel culture that, you know, we've been in for quite a while right now, and that we don't have to be in cancel culture. We don't have to cut everyone off to survive this, that actually there's something that sounds really powerful about standing within ourselves and maybe just being able to tolerate each other a little bit more, to be able to move into a heart space or, you know, the heart chakra a little bit more, instead of feeling like, nope, got to wall you off, and that's the only way to be safe.
Because there's so many people saying that, and it breaks my heart. It's like, if you don't do this, if you don't believe this, then I have to cut you off, as opposed to, and then I have to ask, and if they're not in touch and don't care about anything spiritual, that's not, you know, then I can't really say this, I guess, but are we coming from, when I'm seeing that coming from spiritual leaders in the so-called in the community, and I am a lot, and it discourages me. And I have to ask, are we coming from our higher selves when we're asking that? Is our higher self, is our super conscious that's saying that? Because I go back to, we have to remember that if you believe that you maybe came down with a purpose, maybe one purpose was this, and maybe one purpose was this, and you might need to look at each other and go, whoa, I don't like your purpose. And I don't like your purpose. But you know what? I'm going to find something about you that I like. Mm-hmm. Something. And I don't like it at all. And I'm going to do everything I can do to change what you're doing, because I don't believe in that. You know, like if there's some real strong social issues that need to be changed, then you may say, my purpose is to change that social issue. And this one may say, well, my purpose is to to do this or whatever. But those two people could really, or groups of people could really ultimately do much higher change if they actually found some common ground of where they actually just found that, hey, I actually do like you. I just don't like what your purpose was in this incarnation.
Mm-hmm. And I think, boy, Michelle, you just hit it. I mean, I think that's one of the changes that we do need to see in our world. And so within us, we can start making those decisions to, you know, open up ourselves and our hearts in that way. And that not everyone has to be in alignment with our belief system for us to be able to find some of those commonalities. And I know several of my friends, you know, that's one of the things they're doing. They have platforms where they're inviting people on that have very different views than they do, just so they can start modeling how we can have very different views and yet come together as cohorts and co-creators.
I love that. I love that. That's really good.
And so, as we're wrapping up and running out of time, you know, what do you feel like, Michelle, whether it's from the book, whether it's straight from your heart, what do you feel like is the essential message that you want to leave with listeners tonight?
Well, as far as from what we've talked about tonight, I think I just said it. And you said it too. I feel like we are a world divided, a country that's divided. Sounds like I'm running for office, doesn't it? And it's the exact opposite. There feels like so much uncertainty, so much division, and there doesn't have to be. Even if we really are one, if people would just realize that we're one, but our purposes are different, then and my book will help with that. I really mean it. The books, a lot of my readers at my store will literally, they can't even read anymore without saying you have to get this book, because it's difficult. And I am telling them, you need to sell my book, obviously, but if not, if you don't believe it. But how can you not? How can you not want to get in touch with your energy and want to bring the world together? But that doesn't mean that you have to drop, and I'm speaking to some friends of mine, it does not mean that you have to drop your causes and the things that you believe in. It doesn't mean that. But I think it does mean that we can get back to loving one another enough that we don't just cut every single person out of our lives. It's them versus us. The them versus us is really where we're headed. If we don't get some people like us and your friends who are having these dialogues to say we're bigger than this. And to remember, if we believe that we had any kind of blueprint, I don't know that 100%, but if I believe that sort of, and I sort of do, that I had some sort of blueprint coming in, you know, I'm a rebel, so I sometimes question it, sometimes I don't, but I think we did to some extent have a little bit of a blueprint. We deviate from it, but we had some bit of a purpose, and maybe their purpose is different than mine, but I want to find a way to love that person anyway. So that's the biggest message. And that we can transmute the feeling we have, even a chord can even be our feeling that we have towards how someone, one thing I didn't mention was even a political party. Mm-hmm. That's a chord of connection.
Yeah.
And we can transmute that. We can heal from that. And so many people think we'll never heal from that, but we can. And there's just so much we can't, we're giving up. So really the cords now need to be kind of throwing everyone a lifeline, kind of a love line to say, I'm going to reach out to you. And this is, you know, my love line to you is to say, you know, I care about you. I might not agree with everything you have to say. I might not agree with much of anything you have to say. But I recognize you as a fellow human being that I love and that I'm one with and that I care about. And I want you to know that. So
Well, I could feel just the resonance of that, you know, the resonance of that in my own heart, and just appreciate that and love that term. Let's keep sending out those love chords to one another.
Yeah.
So thank you, Michelle, so much for being on the show. How can people be in touch with you? How can they get the book?
The easiest way is just michellewelch.com. It's a fairly new website, so you can also go to mysoultopia.com for my store, but Michelle Welch is the easiest, michellewelch.com. And then we've got all the stuff, you know, Instagram, even TikTok. My husband's is the funniest because he feeds funny stuff to the dogs, but, you know, Soultopia, but michellewelch.com is the easiest. And right now I'm asking that people buy it. We do sell it, and so does Llewellyn, but if you would buy it from Amazon, and leave me a review, that would be great. Just because, right now, just trying to get those numbers up a little bit on Amazon. So we've sold a whole bunch of books from the store, so that would really help a lot.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Michelle, for being here with us at The Spark. Find her book, everyone, at Amazon, The Magic of Connection.
Thanks for tuning in to The Spark with Stephanie James. Remember that you already have what you need to live a life that is fully lit and fully alive. You're already holding the flame. Now it's time to ignite your best life. Learn more at stephaniejames.world. That's stephaniejames.world. And tune in next week at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, only on transformationtalkradio.com. Shine on!
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.